An increase in coronavirus cases across the U.S. has public health experts concerned.
Is it going to become enough of a problem that you have to pause or pull back on some of those economic, you know, sort of reopenings that are happening? That's the sort of give and take that the public health experts expect to sort of play out throughout this pandemic.
Plus, Bayer reaches a big settlement over the weed killer Roundup, and how educational butterfly kits are backfiring. It's Wednesday, June 24th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. U.S. stocks tumbled today as coronavirus cases surge in several states. The Dow dropped 710 points, or 2.7%. The Nasdaq fell 2.2%, and the S&P 500 lost 2.6%. Our markets reporter Akani Otani says the rise in cases is challenging assumptions that the virus would be brought under control and that reopening the nation would go smoothly.
Now we're being confronted with the possibility that that scenario is not going to happen, and that, in fact, we may see some states having to re-implement stricter measures on business and social activity. Of course, the big question for the stock market is how much of that has been priced in. Prior to Wednesday, we'd already seen stocks make up quite a bit of ground since the February and March sell-off, and there was some speculation that perhaps things were looking too rosy on the stock market front.
Bayer says it's reached a deal to pay $10.5 billion to settle tens of thousands of lawsuits over its weed killer Roundup. The legal battle over claims that Roundup causes cancer has been ongoing for nearly 2 years. Our reporter Laura Cusisto says investors will be parsing the deal.
And the question I think we're going to see play out over the next couple of days is, do investors think this is enough? Is this enough certainty for them to have confidence that Bayer, this cloud of litigation has been lifted from Bayer?
Shares of Bayer jumped on the news and ended the day up 0.7%. The company says Roundup is safe and the product will remain on store shelves. Efforts to enact police reform stalled on Capitol Hill today, with Senate Democrats blocking a bill led by Republican Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina. The bill fell short of the 60 votes needed to advance. Scott's bill seeks to collect data on when police officers use force that causes a death or serious injury. But Democrats say the bill doesn't include provisions to make it easier to prosecute officers for misconduct. A grand jury in Georgia has indicted three suspects in the death of Ahmaud Arbery, a 25-year-old black man who was fatally shot while out running. The three men face 9 counts, including felony murder. All three of them are disputing the charges. And today, a federal appeals court panel ordered the criminal case against former Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn to be dismissed. The Justice Department requested dismissal after Flynn tried to withdraw his 2017 guilty plea for lying to the FBI, saying the agency set him up. The full appeals court could rehear the case, but it's rarely taken that step. Coming up after the break, what the latest data tells us about a surge in coronavirus cases. Coronavirus cases are accelerating across the United States. 33 states from Oklahoma to South Carolina and Washington are now seeing an increase in their 7-day average of new confirmed infections. New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut are telling visitors who come from states with high rates of infections to self-quarantine for 14 days. The rise in cases is threatening the nation's efforts to reopen and dampening hopes for a smooth recovery. Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Krause. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You looked at the 7-day averages of new coronavirus infections. Tell us more about the data and what you found comparing the numbers we're seeing now to those we were seeing earlier this month.
Sure. So what we're seeing now is that COVID-19 cases are accelerating across the country. And so there is a growing number of states where the 7-day average of new cases is higher than the average over the last 2 weeks. So that sort of points to recent increases in new cases. And there's been some discussion discussion of that being the result of more testing, which is true. There is more testing coming online, and the more sick people or people you suspect are sick you test, the more cases you often find. But the other metric that we looked at was a sort of comparable approach for the percent of tests that are coming back positive, and that is also rising. So when you pair those two figures together, you start to get a picture of real spread within a growing number of states.
You also examined the 14-day average here as well. What does comparing the 7-day to the 14-day tell us?
Sure. So in the first place, using a 7-day average sort of helps smooth out lumps in the data. So, you know, if data is not reported on Saturday or Sunday, you know, you sort of solve for that with a 7-day average. But comparing the 1-week and 2-week averages helps us look at new cases now relative to what they have been over a longer time period. So if you see the 7-day average moving ahead of the 14-day significantly, it points to an increase in new cases relative to, you know, the last 2 weeks.
Sarah, what about the death rate? This is also a significant indicator of how serious the spread is or is becoming. What are we seeing in terms of that measure across the nation? Or is it too early to tell as disparate regions are still opening up?
Yeah, so one of the tricky things about monitoring the evolution or the way this pandemic spreads out across the country is there's lots of different metrics that come together to be helpful. There's the number of new cases, there's the percent of positive tests that come back, there's hospitalization rates, and there's death rates. And the hospitalization and death rates typically lag far behind the infection rates, because as you can imagine, it takes time for an individual to become infected, get tested, you know, have symptoms and work their way through the disease, and then perhaps have that escalate to a point where they're hospitalized or die. So those metrics lag behind. And actually recently, the death rate had been declining. The question now is, as we have spikes in cases in many states, does that eventually translate into a new wave of deaths? And that is the sort of outstanding question. And one of the trends that's emerging right now is more young people getting infected. And they typically fare better with the illness than people who are higher risk, either because of their age or pre-existing conditions. But the concern is, especially if those young people aren't wearing masks or are increasingly socializing or going out into public spaces, that they may give the disease or the virus to someone else who then is exposed to a vulnerable person, and then that person becomes sick and dies. So that sort of shows you the transmission chain and why it can take time to have these metrics evolve.
So what are you hearing from experts about the latest rise and generally about the spread we're seeing across the United States? What can they tell us about that?
So the main concern is, you know, as we have these increases in cases, as more economies are reopening and social restrictions are loosening, is it going to become enough of a problem that you have to pause or pull back on some of those economic, you know, sort of reopenings that are happening? And that's the sort of give and take that public health experts expect to sort of play out throughout this pandemic, that the disease is going to spread across the country in uneven waves, and that it is sort of a give and take that will continue. Dr. Fauci testified before Congress yesterday that the U.S. is currently seeing a disturbing surge of infections. So it is something that is on federal public health officials' radar very much. You know, states including Arizona and Texas reported new daily highs as of yesterday, the most recent data available. So, you know, there is broad concern that this is spreading in more places in a way, you know, that may stall an economic reopening and subsequent recovery.
It's interesting what you say about this rolling uneven wave. So it doesn't sound like it's as simple as saying, you know, we're here in New York, you and I, that this is spreading relatively from east to west across the United States. It seems that we're seeing different pockets in many different areas.
Yes. And that depends in some ways on the practices that different municipalities adopt or enforce, you know, in terms of not only businesses opening and closing or social interactions being limited, but also the degree of support for mask wearing, the testing strategies that are employed. States have fairly wide latitude to use the testing capacity that they have, and how they follow up those tests if they are tracing the contacts of people who are sick and asking them to isolate to sort of mitigate outbreaks, the types of communities that they're testing. So there's a lot of different approaches and differing approaches that states are taking, which will mean the way this plays out is not uniform from state to state.
And Sarah, what are the projections for the summer months?
There's multiple dynamics at play here, both now and moving forward. So, you know, some states began reopening their economies in April and May, which is now you know, you're starting to have enough weeks pass that you can see meaningful sort of impacts from that. You also have, you know, large crowds gathering for civil rights protests that were sparked by the killing of George Floyd by police on May 25th. Those have led to large gatherings in many major cities. And the time period that's passed by then, it's still sort of early days to say the degree to which those protests have contributed to spread. But, you know, certainly we have the July 4th holiday weekend coming up. The reopenings continue at varying rates. So again, this is something that is going to continue to play out in waves over a long period of time that is influenced by the different behaviors from state to state, county to county, even town to town.
Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Kraus. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And finally, millions of parents have been looking for ways to keep their children entertained during the lockdowns. One popular choice has been butterfly kits that allow kids to observe the life cycle from caterpillar to butterfly. But our reporter Rory Satran says some families hoping for magical moments are finding themselves having to explain Mother Nature's tougher life lessons.
I was, you know, sort of chuckling to read that there was a lot of caterpillar cannibalism, that there were caterpillars which were dead on arrival, that there were butterflies born with deformed wings. Just all sorts of things can go wrong. And then parents find themselves in this awkward position of having to explain cannibalism and death to a toddler.
One of the companies behind the kits says high demand during the pandemic has led to more mishaps than usual. But not to worry, butterfly fatalities are typically pretty low. And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.